Blog Talk Radio.
See you and me riding like Bonnie and Clyde, rolling 95, burning down 129, yeah. Looking for the law while I push my luck. Riding shotgun like it ain't no thing. Turn the radio off so the girl can sing right. Pull into the party like y'all was some. Night is bottoms up. Throw it on down. Rock this quiet little country town. Drop the tailgate on your truck. Find a keg and fill your cup. Oh, kick it on back. Pretty little mama looking at you like that. Make you wanna slide on. I gotta tip my hat. Never thought a country song make you move like that, yeah. And she's doing any days you do, girl. She got you tapping on the boy show. Hey, Dom, check this out. Man, it's how them girls do it in the dirty side, yeah. She have you on the knee, can I marry you? Tonight is bottoms up. Throw it on down. Rock this quiet little country town. Get up. Drop a tailgate on your truck. Find a keg and feel your cup. Oh, kick it on back. Pretty little mama looking at you like that. Make you wanna slide on in like, girl, what's up? Tonight is bottoms up. Get up. Tonight is bottoms up. Drinks up high, everybody feeling alright. Damn right. Cause tonight is bottoms up. Throw it on down. Rock this quiet little country town to get up. Drop a tailgate on your truck. Find a keg and feel your cup. Oh, kick it on back. Pretty little mama looking at you like that. Take you on the side on it like a whistle.
It is Friday night, and this is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason. That song was Bottoms Up by Brantley Gilbert, and I try to promote Brantley every chance I get because he was so kind to my daughter and her family when our granddaughter died, because he had met my granddaughter, and I want people to know Brantley and to buy his music and to support him as an artist, because this young man is from the same town that my children live in, and he happened to meet my little 13-year-old granddaughter before she died in Walmart and had his picture made with her and changed the way that she looked at life in general and herself in particular. And I will always be grateful to Brantley Gilbert for that. So go and get his music. Now, tonight I have so much exciting news. I'm almost wordless. I know, ladies and gentlemen, for me that's not normal. But did the numbers this morning, and because of all of you, and because of my guests that are absolutely wonderful, like my guest tonight, Elizabeth Raven, who is an author. We'll get to her in a minute. But because of all of y'all, the numbers this morning, this show is blowing up all over the place. Just on the show itself, ladies and gentlemen, we have reached 64,733 listeners. That is less than 300 listeners away from 65,000 listeners on a show that's not even 2 years old. It's because of all of y'all that I'm so humbled and so grateful. When you add all the podcasts that this thing is heard on, which is iTunes and YouTube and FM.com and TuneIn Radio, Podcast.com, Podcast Garden, Mixcloud, SoundCloud, and Spreaker, we're at 82,005 listeners. We're going to reach 100,000 listeners probably right after the first of the year in a worldwide network of over 70 countries. This is giving my guest an opportunity to be heard in places they would might never be heard before, and I am so grateful for all of you, and especially Australia, because Australia is the biggest listening base we have on the show. They are 95% of the listening base, and they also bring us the Teskey Brothers, which is a blues band. And if you roll Eric Clapton and Johnny Lang and B.B. King and Otis Redding and Roy Orbison and Robert Johnson and some of the other blues artists that came out of New Orleans, roll them all up into one, that is the Teskey Brothers. I mean, they are absolutely magnificent. So go look them up, as well as Brantley Gilbert. So with that being said, we are going to get right on. This month has been a strange month. Number one, it's my favorite month. And number two, it's the month of Halloween. And you all know, those who've listened to the show know that I've had three different women on here who are authors, who are also empaths and psychic intuitive and Reiki masters and Reiki teachers and T-Charm readers and tarot card readers and crystal readers. And tonight's show is even more amazing as those shows have been. Because my guest tonight is from Jacksonville, Florida, which is like 4 hours up the road from me. Her name is Elizabeth Raven, and she is a wife and mother, a veterinary professional, but she hides in the shadows and moonlight of relentlessly sunny Jacksonville, where her paranormal romance series, A Tanza's Moon, is set in St. Augustine, Florida, integrating the authentic ghost legends of our nation's oldest city into a spooky, mysterious adventure. Daylight hours are spent indoors working, reading, cooking, spending time with her family and friends, and her five cats. I love this girl already. Otherwise, she can be found dancing, socializing, or joining ghost tours wherever her imaginary friends let her out to play. That I understand so well. So without further ado, yep. Welcome, Elizabeth. Welcome,
Thank you. Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much, Yvonne. This is amazing for me. I am super excited.
Well, I'm glad you're here because it has been a month of weirdness. The things that have been going on in my house are just, the energy level and I don't know if the spirits are up walking around. I don't know what's going on. But
The veil gets thinner.
I know I've been on pins and needles all month, and especially today. I don't know. Maybe I'm losing it. Who knows?
Well, you're feeling the energy. The veil starts to get thinner. And, you know, the spirits are a little more active this time of year. It's part of the wheel of the year.
That is so true. That is very, very true. So let's talk about how you got here. I mean, you're in the veterinary profession.
Yes, ma'am.
You write paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
Was writing something you always did, or was it a detour you took after you got into your profession?
No, it's something that started really early on. I was always very expressive. I'm a dancer. I used to, you know, I mean, whenever I was 5 and 6 years old, my parents would tell you I would color in my coloring book and then write a price on it and take them through so they could tell, you know, so that they could see what I've done, you know. And, I mean, I've always been expressive. I've always looked for ways to just express how I feel, because I feel so much, you know. I mean, there's so much around you, and if you just stop for a little bit and absorb it, it's just amazing, you know. Sometimes it's a little overwhelming, but, you know, I've always written, you know, as soon as I kind of could. I started whenever I was started writing fiction, and the stories that were in my head, I started writing those probably around 10 or 11. And I read a lot of Nancy Drew and, you know, mysteries, and also Sweet Valley, teeny bopper kind of things like Sweet Valley High and things like that whenever I was younger. And so I was trying to write kind of teeny bopper things, but I didn't know enough about how people relate. So one of the books that my mom had bought me at one point, I had picked it out, and it was, I'm an Aries, and it was an Aries astrology book. And not only did it tell me, you know, a lot about my sign, but it also talked about the other signs and how Aries got along with the other signs and why. And I read that really young, you know, and just I would use that to kind of develop my characters, because if I knew enough about the different types of signs, you know, you got your air, fire, earth, and water. Uh-huh. If you know enough about that, you know, you kind of understand someone's core in a way. Of course, it's a lot more complex than that. But for a 10-year-old, for me, if I said, okay, if my main character is going to be an Aries like me, what would be the most volatile opposite to that? You know, a Scorpio. I mean, you know, they're moody and obstinate, and Aries are obstinate. I mean, Scorpio has a lot of great qualities, too. I grew up with two Scorpio sisters, but I was an Aries, you know. And, I mean, so sometimes it was like we couldn't even breathe the same air, you know, but we love each other intensely. And so Scorpio, it kind of helped me, and then I was like, okay, well, who would be compatible? Well, you know, your air signs and your other fire signs, you know. So I would just kind of use that kind of framework to understand the relationships a little bit more. So I don't know.
That makes perfect sense. I never thought of it in that vein, but I like that idea.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I just didn't know enough at the time. So to me, it was like, okay, well, what do I have to do to know enough? Or how can I figure this out where it would be good, you know? So, and then I just get carried away with the characters. And you know, so I wrote a lot early on, but I never submitted anything. And they're all just silly. And I have a lot of journals. And actually, I came across those over the summer whenever I was doing some deep cleaning and stuff. Oh, my gosh. When you look back to journals from whenever you were 12 years old and also 16 years old and 20 years old, good Lord, wow, it's just, I was a mess. I don't know about anybody else, but I was an absolute mess, but it's hysterically funny. So
it would make for a good fiction.
It definitely does, and it kind of rekindles my connection to for me, with characters, anytime I'm feeling kind of blocked or whatever, or I feel like I need to channel who that character is, I do something that character would. Like my main character, Bridget, she does a lot of tarot card readings, and she owns a metaphysical shop. So there's all these crystals and different artifacts and books everywhere and herbs hanging from the ceilings, and it's just really a cool, like you feel like you're in a genie bottle. And everything is just pretty and jewel tones and, you know, just absorbing. So anyway, I'll break out my cards, you know, or, you know, my husband and I will go and sit at the beach under the moonlight, you know, and just kind of hang out for a couple of hours and just absorb the energy. And so that's whenever I'm feeling like I need to get in touch with Nick, who's the skeptical cop, you know, he comes a long way, but, you know, throughout the story, but he starts out as very obstinate. If you can't tell, he's a Scorpio, but he's very obstinate and skeptical, and he was brought up in a very Christian household. All this, you know, mumbo-jumbo, crystals and all this, he was just diametrically opposed to it. And so whenever I feel like I need to get in touch with the police officer or something, now he comes a long way, trust me. But I'll go on a ride along. You know, I have a couple of friends who are in law enforcement, and so I'll go on a ride along and just kind of hang out with them and jot down some of the situations that they come across. And to me, that's kind of research, but it's on a very organic level, just to feel it and experience it, and just this random stuff that comes to your mind. I mean, when I go back and look at my handwritten notes, it's just crazy, you know.
But you wonder who wrote this. Where did this come from?
Exactly. That is exactly. So you do that too.
Oh, I was doing the show last night. This is hysterical. I was doing the show last night, and I was in this wonderful conversation with author Ronnie Allen, and all of a sudden, this voice says, "Yvonne, you have to pull out that book that you put away and didn't finish, because I am ready to come alive again."
Yep.
And I said, "Excuse me," to myself, and he said, "Yes. Jean Lafitte is ready to have his story told." And I'm saying, "But I put you away, Jean Lafitte." And I could hardly talk to Ronnie because Jean Lafitte wouldn't shut up.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, I mean, yeah, that's how it gets. With Nick, Rip, and Bridget, it was, see, because, you know, back to what we were talking about with how I got here was, you know, college kind of killed it a little bit, you know, because you have to write a bunch of stuff that you really don't want to write. You know,
yep.
I mean, I like to write, but if I'm writing about stuff that doesn't interest me, you know?
Yeah, not so much.
You know?
I understand that, yeah.
Not so much. And then in the veterinary career, I'm having to write records, and then then whenever you get promoted and stuff, you know, and then you're writing protocols and policies,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and then I'm a hospital manager. You know, here in Jacksonville, of a, you know, a historic, basically a historic animal hospital in Jacksonville, San Juan Animal Hospital. And, you know, you're writing policies and schedules and stuff. And, you know, it's a wonderful place to be. I love my professional life because I get to connect with a lot of pet owners and my staff, you know, the employees there, the other doctors. It's a fantastic environment. And so whenever I started there back in 2015, I really started to feel like I could write again, you know, and it was a weight off my shoulders, because even though I was having to do some of those things at work, it was such a nice environment. It was different from where I had been. And my creativity came back to me, and it's like the characters walked up and introduced themselves, and then there you go, you know.
You have to write, Elizabeth, because if you don't, you'll go totally insane.
Yes. The words have to come out. They have to come out in one way or another, and right now I'm working on a couple of books, which kind of solves this third one. But because I'm working on two different ones, one that will come out in May and a box set. But that, you know, it has some St. Augustine in it also. It's a fairy tales retelling.
Ooh.
So, yeah, so there's a whole bunch of authors. It's really, really cool. Gina Kincaid and Julie Morgan are just a couple that come to mind because I'm in contact with them a lot. But there's Teresa Hissong, there's Emily Sir. There's a whole bunch of really, really great paranormal and contemporary authors in there. But we all pick a Grimm's fairy tale. And from that, it has to be Grimm. So we all kind of pick a, you know, whatever fairy tale appeals to us, and we kind of twist it a little bit. Just a little bit.
A little bit. Mm.
Yeah,
a little bit,
yeah.
She says, ladies and gentlemen. Just a
little
however
bit. Much you want.
But in our world, a little bit can be masses.
Yeah. Exactly.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, Elizabeth has a favorite city because that's where her books are set, and that city is St. Augustine, which is the oldest city in the state of Florida. And it was conquered by the Spanish. The Spanish at one time owned just about the entire state, which was mostly swamp, or all swamp.
La Florida.
Yes. But St. Augustine was the premier because it held, allegedly, the Fountain of Youth. Now, Montague, if you ever drank from that Fountain of Youth, yuck.
It's
sulfur water. Yeah, right.
And they'll sell it to you, too, in the gift shop.
Yeah, they will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, let's visit St. Augustine for a minute, because there are many, 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 many legends, ghost tales, and hauntings in St. Augustine.
Yes, there are.
Tell me some of your favorites and why.
Okay, well, Henry Flagler was, he didn't conquer it, obviously. He came much later, but he was a tycoon that was able to bring railroads there. He opened up hotels. He wanted it to be a destination of the rich and famous, basically. So, and it was. It very much was. So it was luxurious. That's whenever he built Flagler College. But, of course, back then it was his hotel. Let me think. Oh, gosh, of course, right now I would forget. But his premier hotel, and then the Leitner Museum beside it, or kind of across from it, was the Alcazar. I can't say anything tonight. It's Friday.
Enjoy my world. Welcome to my world.
I know. My tongue isn't cooperating. But Henry Flagler's great. And he himself is not necessarily, although he had huge importance in life and death, you know, his hauntings are more kind of like, you know, he shows up here and there. He checks on his property. You know, there's like a little tile in the college that will, you know, if you look at it at a certain time on a certain light and everything, you can kind of see, you know, his image in the tile and everything. And, of course, it's an opulent, I mean, absolutely exquisite property, just everything about Tiffany stained glasses, chandeliers you would die for. Sorry, that was a Freudian slip. Yeah, in the first book, there's a little bit of that, but it's just amazing. It's so opulent everywhere you look, and that was his style. Well, whenever he moved to Florida, his wife was ailing. And there was a nursemaid, and her name was Ida Alice. And whenever the wife passed, she easily kind of assumed the role of the next Mrs. Flagler. And so, but you know, Henry was a busy man. He was all over the place. You know, he had places to build. He even went further south and like down in Miami area and all that.
Key West.
Yeah, Key West, exactly, yeah. So, I mean, he's built stations. He was all over the place. Well, Ida Alice was bored. And so she kind of fell into the whole spiritualist thing where she was using Ouija boards. And that's, you know, I mean, you're dabbling there, but, you know, you've got to protect yourself and make decisions that feel right for you as you're trying to contact whatever, you know, you're trying to accomplish there. But she, that's all fine, but see, she was also smoking opium, and, you know, she was doing some other stuff there. So, I don't know, you know, she thought that the Tsar of Russia was trying to contact her and that she was going to get married to him. She was having these big benders up while Henry's away or whatever. Well, you know, so she had an imagination, a very fertile imagination and everything, and she also had some other issues, and Henry had her institutionalized a couple of times, you know, so she haunts the Flagler girl's dorm, and she's very integral into the first book, so she's definitely one of my favorites. She's not a malicious spirit from what I've read and from what I've heard. So she's not a malicious one, but she's in the first book, and it definitely puts an interesting spin on, you know, the modern times. Imagine just showing up in St. Augustine, and you're opening up a shop. You're trying to start your life new because your application to vet school didn't go through, and you're just like, you're this person who has these two sides of you, you know, and you've developed this one side for the past several years while kind of not really paying as much attention to the other side. And then so she moves to St. Augustine, and all of a sudden she realizes, because the spirits are coming to her, she feels different. Things are happening around her, and she doesn't have an explanation for it. So, and of course, whenever there's crime involved, the police are going to show up. So she meets this one police officer, and whereas there's attraction, there's definitely, you know, they've got to find a compromise between the two of them. At the same time, she also meets a hearse driving ghost tour guide named Rip Ryder, and he seems to be a lot of people's favorite. There's a lot of my readers that are on Team Rip, but he's just this. He's a California guy that moved to St. Augustine years ago. He's got a troubled past himself, but you know, he definitely understands what Bridget's going through and gives her sympathy in ways that Nick is incapable of, you know. But it's interesting to watch as the characters grow throughout the story. And then leading into the second book, that one has more to do with Ripley's Believe It or Not, which used to be the Castle Warden. And it was also a hotel. It was owned by Marjorie Kennan Rawlings, and it was a hotel back in the 40s when they bought it, before Mr. Ripley bought it. And it was a very upscale kind of venue. And it burned back in, I want to say, 43. Might have been 44. I don't know. I'm not good with it. It's written down. But in my brain, I remember more the impressions and things than I do a lot of those details, you know. It burned, and the interesting thing about it is that there were two women that were found in the upper levels. It didn't completely burn down, but it was just like the top part of it burned. And two ladies that were dead when they were found, but they both were in the bathtub, different bathtubs in different rooms, one kind of above the other. They were in the bathtub dead, and they had a towel wrapped around their face or their neck or whatever, and it was just odd, you know. And so they don't really know what happened. They don't really know who did it per se, but there was a Mr. X. They call him Mr. X because when he checked into the hotel, he scrawled an X into the guest book instead of properly signing in. And there are theories about that as to whether, well, he must have been someone who was very well known and frequented that area for them to let him just kind of come on in with an X as a signature, you know. So then he's, if that's how he's going to be, you know, he's got to be an arrogant guy, you know, you figure. Uh-huh. So, you know, he's just like, whatever, I'm not going to stop and fill out your paperwork, peasant, you know, kind of thing. And so he just scrawls a jagged X into the book, their guest book, and goes on up to his room. Well, he was meeting a young lady, and she was from Jacksonville, actually the San Marco area, just on the other side of the bank from me. I'm in the Riverside area. But she was meeting him there, but she didn't make it until the next day. And then it's that day that the fire started and all that kind of stuff, and she was one of the victims that was found. There was also Ruth Pickering, who was a friend of Marjorie Kennan Rawlings, and her husband, who she was a permanent visitor, or, you know, long-term. But anyway, that in book two, Ablaze, which is Matanzas Moon Ablaze, it definitely has to do with that whole dynamic and the legends that are around there. Because Mr. X is considered a malevolent kind of spirit. And Betty Richardson, she's probably kind of helpless in a lot of ways. You know, I mean, I don't know for sure, but I kind of, in book two, I pretty much, it's my speculation of who Mr. X could be and how that dynamic is and what he was trying to achieve with Betty that night, you know, that he was, that she was supposed to be there and she wasn't. But, you know, of course, that's all, that's part of the story, but the story is taking place in current day with current contemporary characters who are experiencing these ghosts because, you know, Bridget's gifted, she's a medium, she reads tarot cards and does all, you know, palmistry and crystals and all that. And now she finds out she's a medium also. She's like, great. Those imaginary friends weren't imaginary. Okay, good to know.
Hey, I understand that.
Yeah.
See, what you want to say, please just shut up a while. Just go away a while.
Exactly.
Please go away.
They just keep going. But, yeah, those are two from that I've covered in previous books. But the one I'm working on now, a lot of people may have heard because it's not that old of an incident. It was back in 1974. Athalia Poncell, actually Athalia Poncell Lindsley. She had been fairly recently married to a former mayor of St. Augustine, and so she was a very attractive lady. This was back in the 60s and 70s. You know, she had gone up to New York. She was she did like TV shows. She did a lot of print and fashion kind of modeling and stuff. She's a very attractive lady. Well, then whenever she moved down to Florida to take care of her mother, they were actually in Jacksonville first. And then the mother may have gone first, but they go to St. Augustine and buy a house on Marine Street. And a lot of people may have heard of Murder on Marine Street. There's also several books about it. Bloody Sunset is one that was written by a friend of Athalia Poncell's. And there's also a new one, I think it's Murder in the Ancient City or Murder in the Old City by Elizabeth Randall. And it talks about Athalia, and she may not be as, you know, mean of a person as people get. The thing about it is she was hacked to death on her front doorstep at 5:30 in the evening. So, and it's considered it's a closed case, but they weren't able to prosecute the guy who the police and all are pretty sure did it. But this was just back in 1974. And such a horrific thing to happen just pretty much in broad daylight. And so that whole situation is going to play into this third book, Murder. So so I'm excited about that. And it's still a progression of the same characters that everybody's kind of grown to love. Bridget, Nick, Rip, it's still the same cast of characters with a few new people, but just new experiences that are happening to them. So, and they're growing as people, and you can see that progression, you know, through the books.
So when you get ready to do your homework for these wonderful books, now, ladies and gentlemen, y'all cannot go now. You've got to wait till the show's over. You'll miss something if you don't. When you do your research, and mm-hmm. as we are prone to do as authors, do you go to St. Augustine and soak up the environment as well as wander the streets and the avenues and the places?
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I do that at least, you know, once or twice a month minimum. But sometimes I take, like, friends with me and my husband. My husband, actually, for those who don't know, the character Rip is largely based on my husband. And, just like Bridget and everything, you know, there's a little exaggeration, but there's a lot of things that really strike home. But I do believe as an author, each character that you create is still a part of you. So
yes.
They're still very, even though there may be characteristics and traits and mannerisms of people that you know and love, there's still some part of you in those characters. And I believe that even with the villain, you know, because I'm all about balance, which even though I try to achieve that, I very often miss the mark and I'm too far on one side or too far on the other. But I'm always striving for balance. And with these characters, you know, even the villains, there has to be something relatable about them or some aspect that the reader can connect with for them to be a truly effective villain, in my mind. I mean, I don't know.
Well, and it's true because at one point in time, the villains were someone's child, someone's brother, someone's sister,
mm-hmm.
someone's
yep.
baby.
Oh, yeah.
And unless they were just born evil, which one of the true crimes I wrote, I firmly believe that he was born with no conscience. And with my background, there are those that are born with no conscience. No. They're born evil. But generally, yeah,
mm-hmm.
generally, a villain at one point had a pure soul.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, they go south.
Right. And life and experiences and the situations that you go through, they shape who you are. You know,
yeah.
I know I'm not the same person I was even, you know, a year ago or 2 years ago or 10 years ago. That's the whole point. And as authors, that's what we do with the characters.
Mm-hmm.
We have to let them evolve, you know, through the story or if you're doing a series or whatever the case may be. You have to kind of show that progression. But how do you do that with a sociopath or a psychopath? How do you do that, Yvonne?
Well, what happens is with the sociopath is they start off, this is how you progress them. They start off creating these crimes in their mind, and sometimes they write journals about them. Then they have to go and they plan a crime. Like you and I plot out a book. They plan a crime down to the nth degree. Then they seek out their victim, and it has to be a certain victim.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this, to them, it's like writing a story. So once they seek out that victim, they will stalk that victim until such time that they can no longer wait for that adrenaline high to kill them.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Well, once that's done and they collect a trophy, they go back and they relive that crime and get this high all over again until the reliving of the crime is not enough.
Not enough.
So they
got to
do
it
again. Yes, and they plot and they plan, and that's how you progress a sociopath. And they have
mm-hmm.
no conscience. They absolutely have none. They have no remorse. They have no conscience, and it's always somebody else's fault.
Yep, they're the victim.
Yep,
they
didn't do anything.
They believe themselves to be the victim.
Yep. They didn't do anything wrong. They don't understand why. They're in trouble because she made me do it or he made me do it. If they had only done this or they'd only said that, I wouldn't have had to have killed them.
No accountability. They're incapable of, yep.
They have no conscience. So that's how you progress a sociopath in the writing of a novel. You build up to that serial killer mentality. Anything after three kills is considered a serial killer, the same MO.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's how you build them up characterization-wise.
Wow. Yeah.
Feel free to use that in your next book.
So, yeah. It's perfect sense, you know. It totally does. But, yeah, they have absolutely no conscience. And, you know, they refuse to reflect on their own behavior and how they possibly could have done something differently or handled their emotions differently. You know, it just doesn't even occur to them.
And most of them are emotionless. They have no empathy. They have no sympathy. And they have no sense of guilt.
So do you think that's like a chemical imbalance in the brain maybe that they were born with, that they don't have the right receptors for something? Or, I mean,
it could
just
be
born like that.
That combined with environment, and I know that people say our environment does not affect us, but yes, it does. Now, normal people, and when I say normal people, ladies and gentlemen, there's huge quotes all over that word. who is normal? Define it. But
we're not serial killers.
No, but there is a propensity, believe it or not, Elizabeth, there is the propensity in us all to be able to commit that crime.
Oh, absolutely.
Because they do live among us. But we have a conscience, and most of us understand a sense of right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Serial killers and sociopaths do not have a sense of consciousness, nor do they care what's right or wrong. It's neither right or wrong to them. It just is.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, man.
So I have studied them for years. My papers and to get my degree in criminal justice was always on serial killers. They're my no, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not a serial killer minded person, but their psychic fascinates me.
Oh yeah.
Because you think about it, someone that murders somebody, let's say they get in an argument on the street and they draw a gun and they shoot somebody. That is not a thought-out, premeditated act.
Mm-hmm.
Serial killers premeditate.
Yeah. There's a difference between a crime of passion and a plotted, you know.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And so are some of the murders probably. Okay, let's go back to your two women in the hotel. Somebody plotted that. That was not a crime of passion. I was sitting here thinking the scenario in my head, and whoever killed those two women set the hotel on fire to cover it up.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah.
And who knows? He could have been having an affair with both women, and maybe they found out about each other. Who knows?
Yep. Well, there's a lot of gray area there that is fertile ground for speculation. and trust me, I just hope nobody ever tries to seize my search history, because, you know, on the internet searches, because some of the stuff I was looking up for this book, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, wait for the FBI.
I don't want to go on any watch list.
Well, I'm like you. I wait for the FBI to knock on the door for Homeland Security to say, Miss Sewell, what are you doing here? Okay, here's my card. I'm a writer. Here's my book.
Exactly. Here, take a book. You'll love it.
Trust me, you'll love it. I could probably help you solve crimes if you give me half a chance.
Yeah. Well, and see, though, Yvonne, what I sense about you is I know why you've been fascinated with them. It's because that's your opposite. You're a very compassionate, warm, kind person, and you do feel so much, you know, and you're fascinated by the absolute opposite. They are almost robotic in how detached they are with everything. So that fascinates you because it's just like, partly it's like, what makes someone be like that? And I think, you know, just with a lot of things, it's a blend of nurture and nature, you know.
Yes.
There are some scientific reasons why, you know, medical, physiological reasons why they have that propensity. But then there's also, you know, the lack of nurturing or whatever the situation is that they grew up with, you know, whether it was an abusive, I know a lot of them, I don't know that all of them do, but I know a lot of serial killers do have a very abusive environment that they grow up in.
Now, are you ready for this? They're also have an IQ of a genius.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. Yeah,
that,
to
that's
be able
the
to...
scary part, is they're very, very intelligent. However,
yeah.
the intellect that they use is less than intelligent because of the crimes they commit. But they all
right.
think they're smarter than the cops. But then they're...
Mm-hmm.
They always get caught, most of them anyway, because they get sloppy.
Yeah. Well, it's like an addiction. I
yes.
think it's like an addiction. It's like
it
a sex
is.
Addiction, like a drug mm-hmm. addiction, any kind of substance or whatever. They are addicted to the adrenaline rush that they get with the kill.
And the
and
power.
Just like you said earlier, just like you were talking about earlier, you know, the trophy only lasts so long. That only staves them off long enough, and then they've got to have that surge again, and then it's almost like a junkie. It, you know, it just gets really, really sloppy there at the end because it's all about the fix, and that's their fix.
That's their
all
fix.
Yep.
And women serial killers, believe it or not, Elizabeth, are more brutal than men.
I can't. You know, I believe it. I'm not
well,
saying I don't believe it. I believe it.
They are so evil.
Well,
so you're working on the third book.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, Matanzas Moon is out, correct?
Yes, ma'am. Matanzas Moon's the first one. Matanzas Moon Ablaze is the second one.
It's out.
And then the third, yes. It is out. It came out, I want to say, March of 2016. So I know I haven't been spending my introvert time playing with my imaginary friends. I've been doing more of the dancing and ghost hunting and socializing. So I need to get back to
it. Call it research. Call it research. You've been researching.
It is.
There you
absolutely.
Go.
It's completely justified. Entirely justified.
See.
But, exactly. But yeah, so I'm almost finished and about to send it to the editor within the next month or so.
And what is the name of the third one?
By the first of the year.
What is the name of the
Moon Murder? Murder.
Ooh.
So it's Matanzas Moon Murder. So M cubed. But yeah. Ooh. I just thought, yeah. Cubed. Well, see, I was trying to be clever about it being like a mathematical thing, like M to the third power. But then I was thinking murder and cubed, and I was like, oh, wait, you know, no, okay, you. But
now,
this one, I always have metaphysical aspects to each, you know, that play a very integral part to the story for each of these books. And like with the first one, tarot cards were very, very prevalent. There was also some voodoo. No spoilers, but there is some voodoo that's involved in there. But in the second book, it has more to do with possession. And there's some palmistry and crystals and, you know, things like that that are very prevalent in solving the case and in expressing what's going on and all that kind of stuff. In the third book, and I'm really excited about this, there's some tea leaves reading. There's always crystals and herbs, but... there's astral projection in this.
Ooh.
And that's been a lot of fun to play with. So, there's some astral projection, and it plays into the main plot, but it also plays into the overarching series arc, you know, just because I have several books planned. I don't have release dates, and they're not written, so trust me. But I have them planned as far as I know where the story's going, and it's really, really cool. The astral projection really plays into that, but it also, the romantic subplots that are going on, you know, because there's the triangle between Nick and Rip and Bridget, and they're karmically linked, so karmic relationships also play into it, you know, the whole, you know, thing about soulmates versus twin flames and, you know, just that whole thing. So, there's lots of, each book I try to focus on a little something different and see what that brings to the story. And also I try to play into the elements like, you know, air. Murder would be more air. Ablaze is obviously fire. Moon would probably be, I don't know, it wasn't really, moon's just moon, you know, and it has a balance, but
and it also affects, it also affects the tides and the moods of people.
Yes, that's true. That's true. And it's just, it's the catalyst. It's where everything begins. So I guess it's a spark. It's the spark that starts the flame, and then we go to fire, and then the next one is going to have more earth, and then it'll be water, and then we'll do the cycle again. So I'm trying, you know, like I say, I like the seasonal, the whole wheel of the year, and tying that in with a fun contemporary plot where, you know, not only are you having a good time with the characters and the mystery that's behind what's all going on, but you learn a little bit too. It's like I've had readers talk to me, you know, after they've read Matanzas Moon and be like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that that's what those tarot cards mean. And I didn't understand because, you know, Bridget goes into explaining kind of what the different suits are, you know, the cups and what they mean, you know, those are with water and the wands with fire and blah, 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 blah. You know, she goes into that kind of stuff in conversation as they're trying to solve, you know, a crime. And so you kind of, you learn a little bit, especially for people who aren't as familiar, but then the people who are familiar, they'll be like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I got you. I knew it whenever you said the card. But, you know, it's kind of, it's all done conversationally. So.
Well, let me ask you this, and I'm getting these books. No, ladies and gentlemen, if I can't go now, y'all can't go now, you got to wait. Are you coming to the event in Cocoa in June again?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I will be there. I'm on deck. That's happening. But
okay.
I'll have my husband with me, too.
Because I'll be
not
there, too.
Not only will I have my handsome husband, who you got to meet whenever we were there this last time, but, yes, he I'll have my son with us, too. So, yes, I'm excited.
Yeah, Lord willing and the creeks don't rise. The room is already booked. I just got to send in my fee. So
yes,
I guess I'll do that for law.
Well, I will see you then.
Absolutely. Well, you are not going to believe this, my friend, but our hour's almost up.
I know. I just looked at the clock. I was like, holy cow. We're going to have to cut the mic.
I told you we'd go by fast. But I have to ask you this. Will you come back after the first of the year?
Absolutely. I would love to. I would absolutely love to. I have so enjoyed this. You are a fantastic host, and this has been a blast. I've had a good time. Thank you so much.
I told you, it's just you and me having a friendly discussion, like two sister writers talking about things we love doing.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
So if I put you down for April, you'll be happy to come back?
Shoot, yeah, we can do it on my birthday. My birthday's April 12th. I don't know what that falls on, but, I mean, if you're not...
We're going to have to... Let's do it the 13th, because I've got the 12th booked.
Okay, well, let's do it the 13th, then.
We'll celebrate your birthday for a couple of days.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And put it on your calendar. Put it on your calendar, because I've got it on my paperwork that you're coming back the 13th.
Yes, ma'am. I look forward to it.
So... Before we run out of time and I have to do my little housekeeping at the end of the show, tell these lovely folks where you can be found. And no, y'all cannot leave yet. You know you cannot leave until we say goodbye. So tell these lovely folks where they can find you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. I have a website, ElizabethRaven.com, and also I'm on Facebook. Sarah Beth Raven, I think, is my username. But, you know, whenever you pull me up, it'll say Elizabeth Raven. Matanzas Moon has a website. It has a Facebook page. And also Miss Tiki Unlimited has a Facebook page and a website. Miss Tiki Unlimited, that's my publishing house. So I can be found on all of those places. I'm on Goodreads. I want to start doing some more YouTube. So look for me there soon because I'm going to try to start doing some readings from my book and everything on YouTube. I think that'd be fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I have some random videos and stuff from whenever I have gone and done some research that I want to kind of edit and splice together and put together something that kind of shows people where all these things happen. Because if you haven't been to St. Augustine, you seriously, you're missing out because there's just a vibe there. Now, it's really freaking hot in the summer, and I'm a shade girl. I'm an indoor pet, so I go out at night. But it's really freaking hot in the summer, but it's really nice in the off-season because it's not as crowded, and you can go to all the attractions. You can eat at all the really cool restaurants and shop at all the shops without being elbow-to-elbow with, you know, a whole bunch of people, which that's cool, too, sometimes. But sometimes it's a little overwhelming.
Yeah.
But, yeah, St. Augustine's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It is just a fascinating place. And I was just in Savannah recently, too. And that's
I love
pretty
Savannah.
Awesome.
I love
yeah.
Savannah.
Had a great time in Savannah. But, yes, I've had such a great time. You guys find me on, you know, I'm on Google Plus. I'm on all that stuff. Just look up Elizabeth Raven, Matanzas Moon. You'll find me. It's not hard.
And she's also on Amazon, and no, y'all can't go yet.
Oh.
So she's going to come back in April, and I want to thank you, my darling, for spending an hour with me because it's an honor to have all of my author and artist friends come in and chat with me. It's so much fun. I learned so much. And for you,
the honor is mine, and I have enjoyed it immensely.
Well, you are quite welcome. And don't hang up when the show goes dark because I want to reiterate some things. Ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, I will have a co-host with me, Garrett Parmenster. He is with Hanging with Webb, and he is going to co-host the show with me. It is the Saturday night before Halloween. My guest will be poet Robert Lutherford, and he's been on before. He has been ill, but he is much better now, and he has some new poetry for us. So tomorrow night promises to be a haunting night. Now, y'all all know what I say when we get towards the end of the show, and I believe this with all of my heart, is that you don't just feel special, you be special. Because if you just feel special, you'll never be special. Think about that one. If you want to achieve greatness, please, ladies and gentlemen, stop asking permission because nobody's going to give it to you. If anything, they're going to discourage you because people without dreams want to keep those around them pulled down into that pit of despair and unsuccess because it's lonely down there. So if you want to achieve greatness, just go out and do it. Whatever it is you want to do, just go out and do it. One day you'll be just a memory for some people. Do your best to be a good one. Don't be that person where they look into the casket and say, oh, she had nice hair. No, don't be that person. The difference between who you are and who you want to be is what you do. That one is not too difficult to think about because who you are today and who you want to be tomorrow is what you do right now. So if you want to be somebody different, now is the time to change it. Or you can keep being the person you are and be miserable all your life. Your smile is your logo, your personality is your business card, and how you leave others feeling after having had that experience with you, ladies and gentlemen, trust me, that is and always will be your trademark. People will never remember your name. They may never remember what you look like. But I can promise you this, they will always remember how you made them feel. Is that not right, Elizabeth?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Beautiful words.
Thank you.
Words
of wisdom. So, ladies and gentlemen, remember, tomorrow night will be the last show of the week, actually be the last show of the month. We start fresh on November the 2nd. With author Sherry Rentschler, who is a really, really good friend of mine. She's got a new book out. I can't wait to get my hands on it, called Time and Blood. We're going to talk about that and a few other things. And that will be at 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time as well. But join us tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time with my co-host Garrett Parmenster with Hanging with Webb and my guest, poet Robert Lutherford. And remember this, love yourself, like yourself. I mean, sometimes we love ourselves, but we don't like ourselves, and sometimes we like ourselves, but we don't love ourselves. You got to have both to have a balance because we're all okay just the way we are. And remember, you're successful just because you got up this morning. So until tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, I am your host, Yvonne Mason, with my wonderful, wonderful guest, author Elizabeth Raven,
And good night, everybody.
And we both say good night. Now, we are off the air now, but anything we say will go up in the archive show. But I did want to reiterate that when we get off from here, the show will upload into archives. As soon as it uploads, I'm going to put it on my page and tag you in it.
Okay.
So thank you.
You are so welcome. So that you can take it and share it and put it on your pages, do whatever you want to with it. And then tomorrow,
yep,
it will go up on Mixcloud, SoundCloud, Spreaker, Podcast.com, and Podcast Garden. Those are my five podcasts that I put it up on, and I will also tag you in those. But it's also up on FM.com,
mm-hmm,
TuneIn Radio, YouTube under Yvonne Mason, and iTunes under Off the Chain Yvonne Mason Podcast.
Cool. Very cool. I'm excited. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome, Penny.
I had a great time. Thank you so much. You're such a great host.
Well, thank you.
Well, no wonder you have so many listeners.
Well, you know, Johnny Carson taught me really, really well. Growing up, I watched Johnny Carson, and he was the master at talk shows.
He was.
Because he had cards. See, I don't have a scripted show. I just have little notes.
Right.
What he would do, he would have his little cards, and he would have little notes. And his guest would come out for 15 minutes. Well, he would bring unknowns out and just let them talk and then perform or whatever they did. And when they came back the next time, they were known all over the world because he wanted to know them. He didn't care about what – he cared about what they did, but what they did was not their brand.
Right.
They were their
right.
brand. And he wanted people to know them. And he would just have a conversation with them back and forth and bring out things that they never thought they would talk about. And I've heard his guests say over and over, I never thought I would say this out loud on a nationally syndicated show.
Yep, but he had that talent, and you do too.
Well,
you absolutely do. He taught you well.
He did. He taught me very well. I owe my success to Johnny Carson.
You're a very good student. So.
I am. I'm a quick learner, too. I'm a quick study.
Yes, ma'am. Well, I've had an absolutely fabulous evening. I want to thank you so much.
You are welcome, darling, and I thank you for spending an hour with me. And I will put you down on the 13th, so put it down on your calendar. And
yes, ma'am.
Launch any books that you've got out, plus we'll get people ready to join us in June at Cocoa Beach.
Absolutely. I am looking forward to it. Will you have a wonderful Halloween. I know it's your favorite holiday as well.
Yes.
So enjoy, and I will see you soon.
Thank you, darling, and talk to you later.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Swing left to take that back tomorrow.
I will.